Sojourner Truth. I'd like to thank all of our listeners for your donations and overwhelming support of this listener-sponsored community radio, KPFK. It is the support of listeners like you that keeps this station strong, fiercely independent, and powered by the people. Thank you from all of us at Pacifica Radio's KPFK 90.7 FM.
You are listening to KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles.
This is the Cal State LA Community News Hour on KPFK 90.7 FM, covering news and public issues affecting areas students come from, including South and East Los Angeles. I'm Julie Patel-Liss, head of journalism at Cal State LA. Many factors can make someone feel like an outsider: race, class, sexuality, disabilities, religion. But people often don't think about discrimination based on appearance or accent. When it comes to appearance, people, especially women, can be judged for their weight or for early signs of aging, which can lead them to resort to unhealthy and sometimes dangerous ways of addressing that to lose weight or appear thinner or younger. Accents can be similarly problematic. There's countless examples of people who appear to be qualified for jobs on paper, but are turned away after an interview. About 70% of California immigrants experience workplace discrimination based on their skin color and accent. That's according to a November 2021 UCLA Center for Health and Policy Research survey. And the survey found 58% of Asians and 80% of Latinos said they faced accent discrimination specifically. In light of these inequities, my race, class, and gender in American journalism class explored what it means to be different. Our podcast series is called Different: Growing Up as an Outsider. It's a series of mini episodes of non-narrated audio stories about everyday people in Southern California. The webpage where the project is housed also includes original artwork by our students, about 5 text stories they wrote, and a video they produced. The webpage can be found at csulauniversitytimes.com/different. That's csulauniversitytimes.com/different. Our first story, produced by Marcos Franco, Gavin Quinton, and Melanie Reza, is about how a language barrier left one local Armenian woman feeling lost, until she met someone who changed her life.
When Susanna Sagatilian moved to the U.S. from Armenia, she was seeking medical attention that wasn't available in her home country. In school, she was insecure about her English. She found it difficult to get to know her peers and even spent an extra year in high school to get the credits she needed to graduate. In an interview, Sagatilian tells the story of how she found purpose with the help of a caring teacher, Laura Messian. Messian, Susanna's teacher, says the door to her classroom is always open for kids in need of a safe space.
It's like a really small country. And when I was 17 and when I moved, like my dream and my friends, like everything crashed and I have to start everything from the beginning. It was hard. And then a language barrier, and then being kind of illegal in this country. You can't travel, you can't see your family and friends in Armenia. It's still my like painful part. I really want to go back, but still working on paperwork. My name is Susanna. I'm from Armenia, and it's been like almost 7 years that I moved from Armenia. I came because of my my medical condition. That's why we decided to move from Armenia to here. My grandma was here and my aunt is here and my cousins. And I was like kind of excited about being here because in Armenia, a lot of like kids are watching that, you know, high school movies or everything about United States. And they like, oh, I always dreamed to travel by United States. And I was kind of excited to come here because American dreams, movies, high school, you know, cap and gowns, proms, and etc. But then when I moved here and I realized that, oh, I can't go back, I realized that, okay, I'm homesick, I feel the problem, and I have like a huge fear that I will lose that connection with my country. And I was always arguing with my mom because my mom actually loved the United States. And she's like, I love America. I'm so happy that I'm here. And I was always arguing with her. I'm like, no, I hate this country, even though I do love this country. But I was trying to hide my fear. And I was like, no, I hate this country. I'm going back to Armenia. I kind of like the United States, but of course, sometimes I'm homesick. I mean, I miss my country, my city and everything. I do have a lot of opportunity there. And I feel like kind of weak when I move here and my language was not that good. I mean, I kind of can communicate with my friends, but I was feeling insecure about my language. I'm still feeling insecure about my language, but at least I'm more open to communicate with other people than before. And when I moved to the United States at the very first day, I was excited about school. But then when I see there's not too many Armenians, I'm like, I have to talk in English. Like, no, please, please, no, I can't. The main thing was language, that I was super insecure about that. Sometimes I still feel insecure about my language because I do a lot of grammatic like mistakes. At the beginning, I was communicating only with Armenians. Or I was communicating with people who are on the same level as me. I have a lot of like friends from Iraq. So I just communicate with them easily because I know that they're doing the same mistake and they're not going to judge me. I was like keep trying to be in touch with my friends and we are still in touch. But because of the day and time, it's like 24 hours difference between here and Armenia. So because of the day and night, it's hard to communicate with them. There is some difference between Armenians who are living here and there is some difference between Armenians who are living in Armenia. And Armenians are everywhere. So there is a lot of Armenians from Lebanon. There is a lot of Armenians from Iran. There is a lot of Armenians from Russia. And they are raised in a different ways. So sometimes we don't understand each other. That's what I missed. So a lot of people think like, oh, yeah, you are Armenians hanging out together. But yes, sometimes it's really hard to understand each other because they have like different dialect, different like things that they do. Their days are different. Their life are different. Yeah, it's really hard to communicate with other Armenians. For example, I have a good friend. He's from Beirut. And we're talking in the same language, but different dialect, different words. So I'm like, using a lot of like old Armenian phrases that, for example, my grandma uses. And he's like, what? Oh my God, I can't explain you like that phrase. I can't translate you. It's like easier to communicate with my Hispanic friends than talk with you in Armenian. So yeah, because we are everywhere, it's like kind of hard to understand each other. But we do have a lot of similarities, which is our history, which is our culture. And when we start to talk about that, when we gather to eat some national Armenian food, that's like a main thing that we have mutual and it's like fun. And then I meet with Miss Messian, who helped me a lot, the way how she's teaching us to learn English. So yeah, second year, they told me that, okay, since you have a lot of availability, you have to do a TA class, you have to take it. I'm like, okay. And without thinking, I'm like, I definitely want to work with Miss Messian. And one time I was talking with her, I'm like, Miss Messian, I'm just interested. Like I was walking by that special ed classroom and I'm interested if I can like take some extra class with them, spend time with them. It's interesting how they're spending their time. And she's like, you can take class with them, but I can transfer you to that classroom. I'm like, but I want to stay with you. She's like, anyways, we're in the same school. We'll see each other for sure. I'm like, okay. So she helped me to translate that classroom. She also give them a really good recommendation about me. She introduced me really well, which I'm thankful for that. And I start to be a TA in that classroom. So I start to be there. I was helping kids. I realized how many different kids are there. Autistic, and not only there are different like, you know, disorders. And after that, I was keep trying to apply as a teacher assistant, but specifically in Burbank High School. And I was keep in touch with Miss Messin. So I was like, okay, Miss Messin, I tried to apply. She's like, try here, try there. So even after school, she's keep like in touch. And then I accidentally find out that my cousin is working at the ABA field, ABA company, and she recommended me. So technically everything starts from Miss Messi. She moved me to special ed classroom, and then she was sending me like different jobs. It didn't happen, but at the end I found another job, and it's like still her her big job in my life that she did. It's like her direction that she gave me, like she told me to go special ed classroom and meet with that kids.
From East Los Angeles, this is Gavin Quinton, Marcos Franco, and Melanie Reza reporting for our project, Different, Growing Up as an Outsider.
Our next story by Aliyah Zavaleta Sanchez is also an immigrant story. It's about how language and culture led a college student from Vietnam to feel isolated in the U.S. Even as some thought she was well settled with a Filipino boyfriend and his friends. But they often speak Tagalog to each other, so language continued being a barrier.
As a first-generation college student in the U.S., Yun Feng has felt a sense of not belonging in the 4 years she has been in America. She has been made to feel disconnected from her Vietnamese culture and her home in Ho Chi Minh City, and has found that American culture is very closed off to one another and distant, leaving her feeling isolated. Find out how she worked through it, leaving a lesson behind for all of us. This is Aliyah Zavaleta with Yun Feng's story.
My full name is Nguyen Phuong Nhi Phong. I was born in Vietnam, specifically Ho Chi Minh City. I'm currently a full-time student, and my preferred pronoun is she, her. I grew up in Ho Chi Minh City. I would say it's like an urban area because it's really close to the middle of the city. So most of the housing in Vietnam, they're really close together. You don't really see like any garden or anything. They're just like really close together. So I knew a lot of kids there, and I go to school. I can just walk to school. I don't really have to travel that far for school. It's just we grew up in really like close and neat neighborhood. Everyone knows each other. Every kid know each other and play together. The life in America is definitely like much, much different from Vietnam. Even though like my neighborhood, the house is really close together already, but then we don't really know like any neighbor even living next to us, any on the street. Nobody like really walk around or like talking or anything. Everything is so far. It's really tiring just to walk there. If I want like coffee or some boba, I can just walk from my house 3 to 4 minutes and I already get there. But then for now, I have to drive at least like 5 to 10 minutes to actually get to somewhere or even like further. It feels everyone really distant and they don't really care to get to know you. That's definitely like huge. Also another difference is because I'm like the first generation that go to college. When I come here, because my older brother couldn't come, he was stuck due to the visa. So technically, I'm the biggest sister now, and I have to take care of everything. I have to take care of my brother, my younger brother, drive him to school, also like help to book doctor appointment and everything, drive my mom, and then I go to school. Back then, I don't really have to worry about anything. I just like need to study. And now, I suddenly have to like take up so many responsibility. It's really hard for me to get any friends too. So I feel kind of like isolated. I would say my lowest point was because I know this girl because my dad know. Eventually, I found out that she has a new friend group as well. And we like barely like even hang out anymore, even talking anymore. She also come from Vietnam. That's why we getting close together with that. Cause like we in the same situation, so we don't have friend anything. So at that time we just like really close together. But now she found like a new friend group. At first I really like, you know, bitter about it, like why you leave me, and like, you know, like I've been like there for you. Like she faced a lot of like struggle, like with her relationship and everything. I always there to help her. It's just sad that, you know, they just she just like find new friend and just leave me there. I would say eventually I just like, you know, people come and go. You can't really like force them to stay with you. Hopefully I will find another one, even though it's hard. I do make a lot of friends, but they're not really Vietnamese. They like, because my current boyfriend is Filipino, so I know a lot of like Filipinos and Filipinas. Still, I feel really lonely because they speak Tagalog and I can't even understand anything. I just feel like, I feel like I'm not belong there. So I hope eventually I will find a group of friends that I can like really hang out and talk to. I would say when I was in Vietnam, I pretty like giving for like granted for, you know, my culture and identity. I never really like, me personally, I don't even like my name, my real name. And when I come here, I feel like it's a part of my identity. And it's a part of me. So eventually, like, I learned to accept it and loved it. And even like my culture or language. And for me, at first, I feel kind of nervous because I feel like I'm so different to everyone. Like given my culture, how I greeting people, or like everything is different. And I feel like I'm not belonged anywhere. Like even now when I live in here, I still really already like live here for like 4 years already. I still don't feel like I belong here, but then I feel that's fine because I start to learn to be proud of myself, like, you know, my culture, my my country that I was born in and I was raised in. I really like want myself to like speak like English more fluently, because I still like really stutter and like can't really pronounce like certain words like right, because of my, it's how I speak in my first language is hard. But then I feel like it's okay. Looking at myself, I feel like I'm more like, you know, have having more like privilege. Because I was able to like learn English like when I was young. That's why like when I'm come here, I don't really like struggle that much. I can just go to straight to school and study just fine. I do go to ESL, but then it's not that hard. It's not like I'm struggling, I can't understand anything. Of course I'm Vietnamese. I would never be like American. It's just like accept my identity as like Vietnamese, and I will be like that. I will like just be proud of it instead of like, you know, feel ashamed that, yeah, what's like my part, because that's how it it's make me who I am today. For like a Vietnamese immigrant who just come here, and I would say the best is to focus on your study and friends. You don't really have to compare yourself to other because you're different. You don't really have to rush yourself. When you have like good energy, or you feel like you want to step out of your safety zone, just try to do it.
From East Los Angeles, this is Aliyah Zavaleta reporting for our project, Different, Growing Up as an Outsider.
Both
Sagittalian and Win know what it's like to feel like an outsider because of their cultural backgrounds, accents, and language. Our next story, after the break, will show us how the pain of racial and cultural differences can be transcended by connections they give us to our ancestors and our heritage. And that can even lead to healing. You are listening to the Cal State LA Community News Hour on KPFK 90.7 FM. I'm Julie Patel-Liss. Stay tuned, because after the break, we'll hear more stories from our series, Different, Growing Up as an Outsider.
Not only are KPFK listeners smart, interesting, and forward-thinking, you're also very generous and deeply appreciated. Thank you so much for pledging your support to KPFK during our fund drive.
I'm Ian Masters, the host of Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org, returning to the KPFK airwaves Mondays through Thursdays at 5 p.m. and on Sundays at 11 a.m. to help your community radio station survive. Each day, Background Briefing looks into the important stories and issues in the news to provide an in-depth daily briefing with context, history, and insight from the best-informed guests closer to the scene who offer analysis and details often overlooked, especially now that the media owners are groveling to Trump, who craves the adulation he gets from Fox News. So if you want reality-based information to get through the next 4 years, tune in Mondays through Thursdays at 5 p.m. and on Sundays at 11 a.m. for your Background Briefing here on KPFK 90.7 FM.
Cal State LA Community News Hour on KPFK 90.7 FM. I'm Julie Patel-Liss. We'll continue our show with more stories from Different, Growing Up as an Outsider, a series by my race, class, and gender in American journalism class. History seems to repeat itself when it comes to how countries treat immigrants or people who are minoritized for their race or religion. We saw what the Ottoman or Turkish Empire did in the early 1900s with the genocide of 1 million Armenians and the persecution of millions of Jews in Europe and Arab countries over many centuries, leading up to, of course, the Holocaust 80 years ago, which killed 6 million Jews. Some of the world's biggest colonizers in terms of land size and the number of people conquered have been the Roman, Caliphate, Mongol, Ottoman, Mughal, British, King, Russian, French, Japanese, Spanish, and Portuguese empires. More recently, China's been condemned for rounding up the Uyghurs, a Muslim population, and putting them in re-education camps, and Russia for its attacks on Ukraine. Some have also turned their lens on the United States and its history of slavery, its occupation of Native American lands, and its treatment of Japanese Americans in incarceration camps. That's what our next story is about. One Japanese-American woman comes to terms with that history and finds healing through art and fashion. This story is by Faye Casillas.
Phoebe Takeda is a fashion fibers and material professor. She attended Cal State LA as a student for her master's. She focused her master's project on identity by creating a project about her family and her own experience as a Japanese-American person. She speaks on her family's experience being held in an internment camp and her father having been born in one in Arizona. She had completed her master's project by visiting the site of the internment camp to tie the experience together. Her work was displayed at the campus her father teaches at, where they dedicated a wing in his honor, and she also got to speak on her family's experience there. This is A. Casillas on Phoebe Takeda's story.
My name is Phoebe Nae Takeda. occupation is a fashion lecturer in the art department at Cal State LA, and I go with she, her. My upbringing, my parents were college professors at a community college, and they both taught microbiology. My mom also was a board-certified lactation consultant for most of my whole life. I grew up in Santa Clarita, very suburby suburb of Los Angeles, and it was very cookie cutter with good views and lots of roses. My upbringing set me apart, I think, initially with immediate family. Like I said, microbiology parents, and I am in fashion and the arts. I have always been a fashiony, artsy little girl, still am, and I've always been supported, though, by my science-focused family. Something about my upbringing that sets me apart, I believe, is the influence my culture has on the work that I produce in terms of fashion and art. I grew up a Japanese American. My dad's side of the family are full Japanese, and the Japanese American internment camps that took place during World War II was very impactful on them as well as my upbringing. I grew up knowing about it, learning about it, and specifically a big project I've done recently is how to tell and express that family narrative and personal expression within wearable art, and how the information that you could learn about the Japanese American internment camps and its social relevance to current ongoings, past ongoings with different minority communities in the United States is extremely important to know, and the parallels that these kind of instances have is important to express in all forms of art, and how we can educate more people on these different happenings and events while still being able to relate to other cultures and, you know, connect and learn and, you know, express these kind of stories in different forms, whether you're reading about it, talking about it, seeing it in different forms of art or performance, anything like that. So I think that sets me apart in terms of how I create fashion and self-expression. I don't think there was a point in my life that I noticed I was different. I was born a fashion, artsy girly in a science-focused family, so I, you know, was a little bit of the odd one out into my immediate family, but always felt supported. I never felt like the odd one out. I grew up in a pretty middle-class, somewhat conservative suburb. Although in all my schools growing up, there was a lot of different ethnicities, so I never felt pointed out for any reason. And I always felt welcomed everywhere I went. I never felt pointed out for any reason until I did my undergraduate studies in Ohio. Not that I'm saying anything bad about everyone in Ohio, of course. I loved my undergraduate experience, but I did encounter people who pointed me out for being other types of Asian ethnicities and, you know, looking prettier for not looking Japanese, or looking, I've been told I look more Chinese with different haircuts, and it's not, it doesn't make sense to me. And I didn't, you know, take it so personally, but I did feel, you know, there was a time in my, you know, mid-20s that I felt pointed out. Not that it hurt me in any way. I suppose when I was younger, not feeling pointed out for my race or anything, but knowing that my family went through that at a young age, did, like, it was something I experienced. I know other minority communities are pointed out. That was something I grew up understanding to as far as a little girl could understand. A time I've had a strong emotional connection to being different was probably taking it back to my project on the Japanese American internment camps. It was through the research stage to the creation stage to taking all of my project to Manzanar Historic Site and taking photos in my work on the land where some of my family was taken to between Manzanar, Gila River, and Jerome in Arkansas. I felt through the research stage, reading all these stories, knowing if history repeated itself, I would be there. I felt really strong. I interviewed family members who have memories from there, who had their families in the camps. And reading all those stories, connecting with them, hearing all the emotions coming from them and their relatives was very impactful for me. And taking the emotions given to me through family members and through reading stories online and reading books and putting that into representational imagery into the work that I was creating for the garments I made. And I think one of the biggest things, slight change of point, was not just the injustice and the sadness, but in the camps with the Japanese American community not knowing whether they were going to be released ever, how long they were going to be there, separated from family, was all the hope that was brought into the camps, the beauty they would try to make in these desert areas and swampy areas, what they would do to bring community beauty and hope into the camps to be able to survive. I think that's something that hit me really hard, because it takes a lot of strength to feel that way and do something about that in a time where your civil rights were taken away, separated from family, and put into these barracks. And then taking my finished project, putting them on my own body, and then taking photos of them on Manzanar Historic Site in 70-something degree weather, and then getting really sweaty and sunburned because it's desert, you know, puts you only in a fraction of the perspective of being able to live there. I was there for a few hours and got sunburned in 70-something degree weather. So living there in the heat and the freezing with a blanket, sharing barracks with several other strangers, you know, trying, you know, being empathetic, it's kind of wild to think about. Immediately after the whole project came to an end of finishing and taking photos of it, being able to put it on my online portfolio, I felt relief, one, for a project being done, and I felt really good. Overall, it was a heavy topic, and the parallels it has with other minority communities and experiences they've gone through is really hard to, you know, hold inside. I felt really good, though, because I learned a lot and I got to bring this kind of information, you know, into a new form of expressing that information. When my project came to a finish, unfortunately, it was during quarantine and the pandemic. But I got to put a lot of work online, which was really great because, as we know, social media and everything gets these images and this information to spread further than maybe where you could see it in person. So I enjoyed doing that. I got a lot of comments and followers on its specific, you know, page and stuff, which, you know, was really nice. I got to display this work after quarantine was lifted and the pandemic came to an end, in quotations, and so I was able to display this work not until after this exciting thing happened to my dad and our family. He had been teaching at College of the Canyons, a community college in Santa Clarita, for well over 40 years. And he was chair of the department. He was been on a lot of committees. He retired in 2017 and then was teaching part-time, still part of a lot of committees. And that College of the Canyons started a new campus in another area of Santa Clarita. And their first official building was their new science center. And they ended up dedicating that building naming it after my dad. So it is the Don Takeda Science Center at the Canyon Country Campus in Santa Clarita. And at the ribbon cutting ceremony, I was asked to talk about my dad and my project, because this is a big part of who my dad is. He was born in Gila River, Arizona, in the internment camp. So I was able to share this information at the ribbon cutting ceremony. And then from there, I was able to display all of my project in the Don Takeda Science Center for a period of time, which had a lot of visitors, and I got to share a lot of information, even when I wasn't there. Of course, the information is right there to be read beside my project. So it's a great feeling. It's an educational experience, which is, you know, helpful for being in a college setting. It's about my dad, which the building was named after and dedicated to. So it's good. The experience of really researching about my dad's side of the family and the Japanese American internment camps and just being Japanese American shaped me in the sense of being very empathetic and being very passionate about, you know, equality and, you know, racial injustice and cultural appropriation seen in the fashion industry. I'm a lecturer now in the fashion department, and with the amount of culture we have in Los Angeles, when we see it in the fashion industry, cultural appropriation, how can, you know, I work with all the students to also have that same passion towards changing that idea and working with them on that. So I think it changed me or growing up like this, you know, makes me very, you know, focused and heartfelt in terms of, you know, seeing that in a different way. Some advice I'd like to leave people is just continuing educating yourself and others about different racial injustices you've seen, you've experienced, you have had friends or family experience, because the more we can talk about it, the more, you know, everyone can learn about it. And the idea of not learning about it and history repeating itself is a very scary thing. And we have seen throughout our lives and our family's life. So I think in any form of how you learn about it and share information about it, whether it's reading about it, watching a documentary about it or a movie made about it, seeing art made about it and really learning about these cultural injustices and even any form of experience that, you know, you resonate with and sharing that information is, I think, the best thing. Because I grew up learning about the Japanese American internment camps, but just doing the project I did about it, I learned so much more outside of just my immediate family. So it really helped me grow as a person, and it helped my art also grow. So I think finding a way that, you know, you can relieve expression by telling these things that are important to you or important to someone you care about is a great thing to do.
You're
listening to the Cal State LA Community News Hour on KPFK 90.7 FM. I'm Julie Patel-Liss. You can hear the full series, Different Growing Up as an Outsider, at csulauniversitytimes.com/different. After the break, we'll continue with a final story from this series. Please stay with us.
Activity
that shall contribute
to a lasting understanding
between nations and between the individuals of all nations,
races, creeds, and colors.
To gather and disseminate information
on the causes of conflict
between any and all of such groups,
and through any and all means
compatible with the purposes of this corporation,
to promote the study of political and economic problems,
and of the causes of religious, philosophical,
and racial antagonisms.
That is our mission.
Cal State LA Community News Hour on KPFK 90.7 FM. I'm Julie Patel-Liss. Next up, we continue airing our latest series by my race, class, and gender in American journalism class. This time, we focused on the power and price of being different. As part of the series, Jose Oliver brings us a story about Angelica Figueroa, a Latina from the LA area who was uprooted to a mostly white area near San Francisco, and how that changed her outlook on life.
Angelica, who goes by she and they pronouns, recounts her upbringing as a young Hispanic girl, uprooted from her Los Angeles suburb stomping grounds to a predominantly Caucasian enclave near San Francisco. She describes it as being a culture shock, but finding her calling in recent years has helped.
I'm Angelica Figueroa. I'm currently based in Monterey Park, San Gabriel area of Los Angeles. My current occupation is a freelance artist and artisanal vendor. My preferred pronouns are she, her, they, them. I would say my upbringing was a lot of fun, but also a little chaotic in the sense of like moving around. I grew up in, I would say, Boyle Heights, and then I moved around to Baldwin Park. And then I even got moved for my dad's work. When we relocated, we went to the Bay Area in this small, quaint city called Concord, which is like about 30 minutes away from San Francisco. And then after 3 years being up there, then we moved back down. I would say there's a lot of different ways in which my upbringing and my background set me apart from growing up later in life. Moving from like a predominantly Hispanic and Latino neighborhood into a predominantly Caucasian neighborhood and being one of the few people of color there, that was a very big culture shock. Also being part of the queer community, I would say, would be another. And also being having a religious upbringing as well. You know, those two last ones not really going hand in hand. And sort of on the opposite side of the spectrum, I'd say that set me apart. One of the points where I did notice that I was different was, you know, moving up north. That was just such a big change. And, you know, adapting and changing even the pronunciation of my name from Angelica to Angelica to make things easier for people. Even being in that outcast group, I also sort of was like a goody two-shoes, or like, you know, like a student that cared about their grades. So I feel like I'm a series of contradictions in some ways. And in high school too, you know, I was in a more outcast group, I would say. Like, not your, you know, popular kids, not your jocks, but I guess the rocker or rebellious group. But at the same time, my parents, you know, they're a little strict, and one of the lowest points that I faced in being different was, you know, the mental health that goes with it and just feeling alone. Like in high school especially, there's times where you're going through the teenage years and you're trying to figure out who you are, but also like you can't really go to your parents, or like I at least didn't feel like I could go to my parents at that time. And when I did, it was sort of met a little bit with resistance. I did go through like depressive states. In the short term, I would say affected me, you know, just trying to seek friendships that I felt safe in and connections I felt safe in. You know, I turned to music, really, lyrics, and just finding meaning in lyrics and words to express what I was going through. What helped me get out of that period would be like the community that I surrounded myself with, like-minded people, and then also just exploring things, exploring art classes, interests that helped me embrace my uniqueness, individualism, helped shape me because it made me more adaptable. It made me embrace the things that might have singled me out in certain groups. It made me like become more clever and really like try to be creative with things. I would give the advice to anyone facing similar issues, or even my younger self, be yourself. In the end, we only have ourselves. Yeah, we have family and friends, but like most of our time is spent alone. So you have to sort of like the person you are. And then, you know, reflecting a lot, like you get to realize what sets you apart from others, what makes you different, what makes you unique. Not everyone is going to like you, but other people are going to love you. Those people will make your uniqueness and your individuality shine through. Seek community or friendships that embrace you and help strengthen and make you grow, not hide who you are as a person.
Reporting from Los Angeles, I'm Jose Oliver with Growing Up Different.
People with a disability often experience challenges that prevent how easily they can navigate the world. Although a lot has changed since the heyday of the disability rights movement, there's still progress to be made, and we'll hear about it next in Josmari Molina's story about Angela Grace Yusan.
Thank you. Angela Yusson describes how both her ethnicity and diagnosis of autism spectrum disorder affected her ability to connect with her peers and how she was often ostracized because of it. In school, she was also one of a handful of Asian Americans in attendance, and she feels that this further alienated her.
My name is Angela Grace Yusson, and I was born in Los Angeles, California, more specifically Koreatown, Los Angeles. I'm a full-time student with she, her, hers pronouns. People or no one reaches out to me at all because I have a disability. I was the only like Asian student in most cases. And it was really difficult for me just to stay grounded with everybody else. In fifth grade, I was like the only Asian female in the classroom and with a disability. And it's really hard for me to like communicate with others. It's always really hard for me just to try to socialize with other people because they already have their cliques. Later in sixth grade, I was desperate to make new friends because it was a new environment. I get to be a new me and I get to shed the past. And so then right there and then, I was looking for some sort of people to hang out with. I thought I was content enough, but people are always out there in my school, as this was middle school. They were out there to bully me. They were out there to be kind of like asking me for money or asking me for food. The lowest points of my life included my first year of high school. I was basically from my middle school, which was Young Oak Kim Academy, and then I transferred from a co-ed school to an all-girls school, in which I ended up having to deal with a lot more issues such as being discriminated because I'm the only Asian, one of the few Asian females in the class. The rest of them were either white, black, or even Latino. They would often like avoid, disregard me. They would often like try to leave me out of conversations, or they don't want to sit next to me because, for one, it's also includes my disability because I had an assistant when I was a 15-year-old, and people were often like trying to take advantage of me because I'm dependent. In the summer of 2021, my grandma passed away from my mom's side, and once mom and dad and my sister heard the news, we had a phone call from the Philippines. My mom and my sister were devastated, so they were both crying. I did not know how to process, and I heard brief words of shouting like, "Oh, your grandma's dead. My grandma's dead. Why did they take her so soon?" I was like processing all these emotions and thoughts in my head, all to the point where I started like going out the house. I ran out the house and I started screaming, not knowing how to grieve my feelings in public, in private, because of my disability. And due to the fact that my disability, autism, has been like made it harder for me to express my emotions carefully and wisely and appropriately. I felt like I didn't want to regard that at all. It felt like I had a hard time like trying to think of ways to calm down in private or calm down without having to cause a scene or embarrass my family. So then as I walked around the neighborhood screaming, my mom was I came back to my mom and dad and they were like, "Why did he scream? Why did he scream out loud when you're making this such a big deal towards other neighbors when it's only a big deal in our family?" And I told them I had nowhere to go. I had nowhere of her emotions to let it all out. Like, I can't even cry, I can't even get mad, I can't even be shocked. All I had left was to scream. And it was the insides of my mind that said, "Oh, you messed up, you really messed up," even though you knew it was wrong. And then once, a few days later, mom and dad were still commenting about it. And I was like, "Mom, you don't understand. I had a hard time crying. I had a hard time grieving for my grandma's loss. How could you try to blame me if I just didn't have the emotions to let it all out?" That's how the whole like loss of my grandma went. I seeked help from my online blog at the time that I was a curator of, and I told them that, "Oh, I lost my grandma. I'm in total despair right now. I'm so worried about like what will happen to the family, what will happen to me and my mental health." I felt like I was losing it all. I felt like my mind was going in a circle and I just had a hard time like letting everything go. During that time, they told me that I am loved. They told me so many different affirmations like, "I am loved, people care about you, people want to see you grow and do better." And those words really affect me a lot. It shapes me by allowing like myself to give values of the American culture and the Filipino culture combined. As I was born in the U.S., I usually dabble in some parts of Filipino culture in my life. Like, for example, the food I eat, the the Catholic religion that my parents are part of and the rest of my family are part of. I'm also dabbling in like some parts of their language, TV shows, news media from them, from the country. It shapes me by allowing myself to understand that I'm like everybody else. Nobody's telling me that you're less than unless I tell myself that I am. It's not your fault that you're autistic. It's more of a blessing to be this way, because no matter what, people have their own issues. People have their own issues in life. No one is perfect in this world at all, and nobody is able to nobody's really like able to solve autism by itself unless you get help from a loyal community. It doesn't have to be big or small. It could literally be as much as 15 people in your life. I would say you matter in all communities that you're part of. It doesn't really matter if you're a Filipino American, you have a disability such as like autism or Down syndrome. It really matters that you learn to love yourself first. You learn to see the beauty in you instead of just having to like shelve everything in the back. You know yourself more than people know themselves more than what they think. And it's better off to say that just follow your instinct, follow your gut to like believe that you are enough, that you matter in yourself.
Angela's family and acquaintances could not be reached despite a phone call and email. From Los Angeles, this is Josmari Molina reporting for our project, Different, Growing Up as an Outsider.
You can hear the full series, Different, The Power and Price of Standing Out, at calstatelauniversitytimes.com/different. You've been listening to the Cal State LA Community News Hour on KPFK 90.7 FM. The show provides news about issues affecting undercovered areas that Cal State LA students come from, including South and East Los Angeles. That's all we have for now. I'm Julie Patel-Liss. I hosted the episode and am executive producer of the show along with April Brown. Students from my race, class, and gender and American journalism class who contributed to this episode are Marcos Franco, Gavin Quinton, Melanie Reza, Alia Zavaleta Sanchez, Jose Oliver, Josmari Molina, Faye Casillas, Omar Ortiz, Samuel Valencia, and Jose Cabrera. Our series for this project includes original music by Luca Fiore, and the show's theme music is Contagious by Mark Vard. A special thanks goes to other Cal State LA faculty and staff, including Christina Hackle, Tony Cox, Andrew Gampa, Joanne Lightford Powell, Chanel Curry, Nidhin Patel, Julian Reyes, Jane McKeever, Joseph Gallegos, Eliel Beltran, Jeff Fust, and Jesus Cruz. I'm Julie Patel-Liss. From all of us at Cal State LA, thank you for listening.
LA Theater Works airs here on KPFK every Sunday evening from 10 p.m. until midnight. Coming up tonight,
a group of friends decamp from 1920s Paris for the Festival of San Fermin in Pamplona, Spain.
You say such damned awful things, Jake.
You asked me what I knew about Brett Ashley. I was trying to be truthful.
The Sun Also Rises, adapted by Kate McCall from the novel by Ernest Hemingway, next time on LA Theater Works.
That's LA Theater Works, coming up here on KPFK tonight at 10 p.m.
Support comes from UCLA Center for the Art of Performance presenting Tarta Relena on March 21st at the Nimoy. Exploring the rich tapestry of a cappella music with roots stretching across the Mediterranean, Tarta Relena's repertoire spans from traditional oral music to original compositions. Experience the duo's complex yet simple harmonies, achieving maximum expression. For more information and tickets, visit cap.ucla.edu and kpfk.org.